Good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. Members of the public who are watching, you can get information about what we're discussing, our agenda, a copy of the bills, et cetera, on our committee website, which you can find right online, and look on the right-hand side and you'll see the links. We're gonna start as usual by having Mr. Doslin take the roll.
Good morning, everyone. Chair Pinto.
Present.
Vice Chair Pryor.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Daphne.
Present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens present.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Morrison. Representative Morrison. Representative Wozlawick.
Wozlawick present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott present.
And one more time, I'm going to check for Morrison. Looks like she's not with us yet. We do have a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doslin. So we'll move to approval of our minutes, the minutes from our last meeting, which is April 6th. Vice Chair Pryor, if you could please move approval of those minutes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections, members, to the minutes from April 6th? So hearing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. So the minutes are approved. That motion passes from April 6th. And so members, we are first starting out by hearing two bills related to capital investment. We're going to hear those informationally. They follow on from our hearing on Tuesday. For those interested in tracking along with our budget proposal, we'll get to that in just a little bit. But we do need to address these issues first. And I don't want to forget to note this for members that having heard these proposals this week in capital investment, relating to capital investment, we'll want to make sure to provide any input and thoughts that we have to Chair Lee and to the members of that committee as they are putting together a proposal for capital investment. So we're going to start off by hearing just a section of House File 4666, which is authored by Chair Lee, but we're just hearing it informationally. So we just have the bill in front of us to just look at in that way. And the particular sections that relate to our committee are Article 1, Section 18, Subdivision 4, and Article 4, Section 7. So the big bill, but we just have a couple little pieces. And in particular, this is a proposal from the Walz administration relating to facilities for childcare. And so we have Assistant Commissioner Brown with us. I'm so glad to have you back. And Commissioner, if you could describe for us your proposal in this area and other information you want to share, and certainly identify yourself first, please. So we have you. I can see you on the screen, but your square's dark and you're muted. Oh, okay, now we can see you. Excellent. There we go.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Chair Pinto and committee members, my name is Tiki Brown. For the record, I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services. I do have a little slideshow that we'll share with you, just two slides.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you very much. So first, of course, high quality early childhood facilities, as you know, help children thrive as they prepare for school. And demand for early childhood facilities is increasing as more low incomes use early learning programs through the Minnesota Early Learning Scholarships Program and child care subsidies, which are tied to high quality programs under Parent Aware, which, as you know, is Minnesota's quality rating and improvement system. Additionally, a lack of high quality child care facilities is a major barrier to expanding access to child care. So our capital budget recommendation is for $10.375 million for statewide grants to renovate or build early learning facilities. The funding will be available to pre-design, design, construct, renovate, furnish, and equip early childhood learning facilities. Grants will be available to political subdivisions, nonprofit organizations, and tribal governments through a competitive request for proposal process. And these projects will require a 50% non-state fund match with grants for up to $500,000 for each individual program in a facility, or up to a maximum of $2 million for a facility that houses three programs or more. Now, since 1992, on the next slide, you'll see that the state has funded 76 projects with $23 million in state grants through the Early Childhood Learning and Child Protection Facilities Program, which was established in Minnesota Statute 256E.37. You can see the variety of projects across the state. And as required by statute, 57 of these projects, or 80%, were in Greater Minnesota, and 18 were in the 7-county metro area. And the last appropriation for this program was $6 million back in 2014. And that's all I have for you today. I'm happy to stand for any questions that you might have.
Members, are there any questions for Commissioner Brown? I'll just ask you one thing, Commissioner. Somebody else may need to assist you with this. Those restrictions of $500,000 per program, or up to $2 million for a facility houses three, is that an existing law in 256E.37, the fund? You're talking about putting money into a pre-existing fund. Are those restrictions under current laws or something that you're proposing? I guess I'll explain why I'm asking in a second. Not sure if you're the right person or if somebody who's with us.
I might actually have to phone a friend on that one. I can tell you that the breakdown in funding as we've proposed it with the general obligation bonds and the split with general fund does allow for tribal program access and nonprofit program access with that general fund dollar amount. But we will have to look into the how we came up with that breakdown in terms of the funding.
I mean, is there, I just wonder if there, I know you have several folks from DHS who are on, I'm not sure if any of them have that. As there may be coming out, I'll just explain to members. We heard a proposal from Representative Schumacher on Tuesday, the need for a facility in his community of Laverne. I think there's a need in others as well. I think they needed like $3.5 million, which would be well beyond the limits here. I see you have your hand raised, Representative Damoth. I'll maybe finish up this line of questioning, but then pull you in. But is there anybody from DHS who's just able to tell us where that $500,000 or $2 million restriction comes from? Is that a new thing or something that's currently existing in law? Ms. Sommerfeld.
Mr. Chair, that's an existing law.
Okay, and could you identify yourself, Ms. Sommerfeld?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, Jennifer Sommerfeld, Department of Human Services. My apologies.
Okay, all right, thank you, an existing law. Okay, thank you. And then Representative Damoth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Assistant Commissioner Brown, I appreciate the graphic that was included, you know, that demonstrates the focus outside of the 7-county metro area. So just to comment on that. And then another question for you, Mr. Chair, maybe that someone from the department could answer this, but we had heard earlier in committee about the child care revitalization grants that were going to be, the application process was going to be started the end of March, and that was that $22.5 million that we had allocated from last session. Just a question, if the grant application process has started or when we could expect that?
Yeah, great question, Representative Damoth. And I'll maybe highlight that those grants, the federal law that we got the money from is federal funding required those to be smaller, but definitely capital projects like this. So is there somebody from DHS who can answer Representative Damoth's question?
Chair Pinto, I'm happy to answer that.
Thank you.
Chair Pinto, members of the committee. So that application did open up just at the end of March. I want to say March 29th. And you are correct, Chair Pinto, that those are for much smaller amounts, really focusing in on minor renovations, whereas this this proposal with the governor's office is for expanding access to childcare. Thank you.
Maybe for larger, I think the federal requirement was that they could only be used for minor renovations and not major renovations, unfortunately. Representative Damoth, follow up?
Yep, just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the information, Assistant Commissioner Brown. Knowing that those applications did open March 29th, do you know when those smaller grants will, when people could start to see the money flow through?
Commissioner Brown, or somebody else from your team. Oh, there we go.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. We'll actually have someone from my team speak to the details of that.
Okay. Let's see who unmutes, and please unmute and identify yourself if you're somebody who can help answer Representative Davis' question. Ms. Swenson-Klatt, yeah, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Deb Swenson-Klatt with the Department of Human Services. The grant rounds, Representative Damuth, are running every 3 months through the spring of 2024. So applicants for this first grant round should be seeing funds rolling within that 3 month period and then thereafter every 3 months.
Representative Damuth.
Thank you for the information, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers or those that from the agency that have helped answer questions. Very much appreciated. It's good to see the money starting to flow. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. I'm looking to see if there's other questions. I guess I will just highlight for members for this that as we're providing input to the Capital Investment Committee, one thing we'll want to think about is what do we think about those restrictions of the $500,000 and $2 million? Again, that would not help out the program in Luverne that we heard from Representative Schumacher and I suspect others around the state. On the other hand, the more that you allow for a $3 million proposal, suddenly that eats up a lot of the $10 million. So I would certainly be open to members' thoughts offline. I'm going to be sharing thoughts with Chair Lee and the committee soon, and I would urge all of you to do the same. So I'm not seeing any other hands raised. And so Commissioner Brown and team from DHS, thank you so much. I might ask you to stick around for the next bill because I think it's going to be real quick and we may possibly need a question of you from you on that. But thank you. And with that, we're going to move from House File 4666 to the next bill. And Vice Chair Pryor, you are up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So committee, we will now hear House File 2369 informationally. And Chair Pinto, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so members, House File 2369 was a bill that I drafted last year that goes to the same fund as the bill that we just heard. The difference is that it's a blank appropriation, and so we'll need to fill that in. It's only general obligation bonds, which has the disadvantage of not including general funding that, as Commissioner Brown said, could go to nonprofits and others. And then it also would waive the geographic restriction. Representative Damuth had possibly referenced this in her questions to say that the funds could go wherever in the state they're needed, and that could be all over the state. But otherwise, very similar. I don't have any testifiers. I'm not sure there's a lot more to discuss about it, but I want to at least highlight it that that's another bill that is in our area and takes a slightly different tack. And again, I'll be providing input to the committee, Capital Investment Committee, and would urge members to do the same. So I'm not sure if there are questions about that, Madam Chair, but it was another bill for us to take another look at.
Great. Members, any questions at this point for Chair Pinto's bill? And I'm not seeing any. So any closing comments, Chair Pinto, on this bill being heard informationally?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll simply urge members, now that we've heard several of these bills this week, and we had also heard, I think, earlier, bill specifically for Greater Minnesota facilities funding as well, I would urge us all to provide input to the Capital Investment Committee. And then I think we're ready to then move on to the main event today. And thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right. Thank you, Chair Pinto. We will now move to early childhood to the Early Childhood Omnibus Bill. And Chair Pinto, would you like to move House File 4735 to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means?
So moved, Madam Chair.
And would you like to move to adopt the DE2 amendment to House File 4735?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. And then also, would you like to move the A4 amendment to the DE2 amendment?
So moved on that one as well, Madam Chair.
All right. So Chair Pinto, would you please explain the A4 amendment to the DE2 amendment?
Certainly, Madam Chair. And so members of the public, just so we're clear on what's going on here, the House File 4735 is going to be the bill that our budget moves through. We had heard on Tuesday a walkthrough of the DE2 amendment and received testimony on that yesterday. The A4 amendment that's before us right now just contains a bit of cleanup to that and some changes since Tuesday. This is just the nature of where we are in session. And I'd ask Madam Chair to have Ms. Mock just walk through the A4 and then have our fiscal staff walk through the updated spreadsheet. I think there's a few cleanup items on that as well. So go to Ms. Mock first, if we can, Madam Chair.
All right, Ms. Mock, can you please identify yourself and then do the walkthrough for the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. I'm Annie Mock with House Research. So I'm going to walk through the A4 amendment. And as Chair Pinto said, most of the changes in here are technical or cleanup in nature. So the first set of changes, lines 1.3 through line 2.3, are all changes to the Brain Builders Bonus Program. So this is the new program that's established to provide bonuses to family child care providers and legal non-licensed providers who care for, under the DE2 is infants and toddlers, but under in this amendment that is changed to just caring for infants. The other substantive change in this language is to provide that it's for providers who care for infants who are eligible for CCAP or receive CCAP or an early learning scholarship. Most of the changes starting on 2.4 all the way through 2.28 are all technical changes to the appropriation section, so number changes and places where I missed things like this is a one-time appropriation. The next probably most substantive change would be on page 3 in line 22. And this actually, excuse me just a minute, I got my notes. Sorry, page 3, line 23. This actually changes eligibility for the early learning scholarships for families from families who have 185% of the federal poverty level, and increases it up to for families with income up to 200% of the federal poverty level. And then along with that, a corresponding change, you can see on page 3, line 28, then it changes or it adds a priority group to the scholarships to provide that families who have income less than or equal to 185% of the federal poverty level are a priority group for receiving scholarships. On page 4, line 11, there's some language just providing that the additional appropriation that's in the DE2 for Head Start must be spent on early Head Start. And this language just clarifies that additional $10 million appropriation, a portion of that should be spent on early Head Start, as well as what the any Head Start programs are currently spending on early Head Start. And then finally on page 4, starting on line 18, you'll see that there's a workforce study requirement added to this, to the DE2. So this would be an appropriation of $255,000 in fiscal year 2023 to DEED for this workforce study. And the committee did hear that bill earlier this session. And that is the A4.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. And we'll now have Mr. Burke, if you could walk us through the spreadsheet, please. All right.
Madam Chair, let me have a slight technological glitch here. I'm trying to get the spreadsheet up.
I felt for a moment like this is radio and we had dead air. And
I'm sorry, a major
catastrophe, but no, it's not. Take your time, Mr. Burke. We appreciate your work.
No, I just say I'm trying to, here we go. Let me, I believe, share my screen. It should work. Except it is not. One moment.
Right, but we're making progress. We appreciate that.
We might be. Okay, here we go. We'll see if this works now. Okay, this is not formatted as well as an IP, but okay. Mm-hmm. So there really are not substantial changes from the last time it was seen by the members. So running down the items in first column B and J is the governor's item for forecasting basic sliding fee childcare is not in. The governor's item for CCAP max rate to the 75th percentile, which has a cost of $51,000 in 2023 and $220,000,240 in the tails in the general fund, will come to, there's a related federal portion for that at the bottom of the sheet. The change in the definition of family is the same as it has been listed, $56,023 and $37.5 million in the tails. These bracketed items, this is the governor counts these as a package in his tracking. And so the bracketed number is what they all add up to, but the items are broken out below. We have $29.133 million in 23 for the child care hardship grants. That's a one-time expenditure, but it is available until the end of the 24-25 biennium. Then in the tails, there is money for the one-stop child care assistance network, $1.2 million. There is money in for the workforce development grants portion of that item is $1.3 million in the tails. The Shared Services Alliance piece of the governor's initiative is $500,000 in each year of the 24-25 biennium. And the technology grants portion of this is $300,000 in 23, 24, and 25. And then there is an administrative line that is buried in for all of this that has a net cost of $490,000 in 24 and 70,000 in 25. That's all what's in that package, and the bracketed number is the total for those items. Then there is an item we've talked about before, which is the interaction of the various CCAP changes. This hasn't changed on the sheet. It is the effect of doing more than one of these at a time. So it saves 24,000 in 23, but has a cost of $21.398 million in the tails. We have the item that makes the reprioritization of the basic sliding fee waitlist permanent, and that costs $15,441,025. The child care stabilization base grants item has changed in number, but not in nature since we saw this 2 days ago. The amount for the 23 year is 30 million. It had been listed at 71, I think it was. We had information from the department that they have enough federal funds left so that this is the amount they would need in 23 to continue the base grants at the current level. And then there is 80.371 million in 24 and 80.421 in 25 to continue the base grants into the next biennium. The family friend and neighbor item has not changed since it was seen last. It is 3.167 in 23 and a total of 6.766 million in 24 and 25. There is still $125,000 in 25 to continue funding of the Office of the Ombudsman for Family Child Care. This number probably will get refined some. We've talked to DHS, but this is a proxy for the amount, and the language continue. You know, the office continues with funding, and we'll make sure we have the right number as we get it. The retained
Brain Builders Alliance, Brain Builders program is $2.5 million in 2023. That's the same as you saw earlier this week. The developing a childcare cost estimation item has not changed. That is $378,000 in 23 and $172,000 in the tails. And then the display has changed a little bit on the chair's IT and data sharing project. $9.5 million of it is going to Minute. And that was reflected in the author's amendment that changed and added a section. And so now we have a section for Minute. And you'll see below that the data practices part of that initiative, the $500,000 is now going directly to Minnesota Management and Budget, although there's considerable discussion about exactly how to refine this proposal, and that might affect the tracking down the road, but at this point that's how the amendment allocates it. Total expenditures in the general fund in this bill for human services items are $75.561 million in 22-23 and $467.054 million in the tails. And I will highlight in the green section federal spending as part of the 75th percentile. The governor used $47 million worth of TANF funds in his forecasting basic sliding fee initiative. That's not in this bill, but the same TANF funds that the governor used there are used in this bill to reduce the general fund cost of the 75th percentile to the numbers I mentioned previously. And then the governor uses $68.5 million in 22-23 and $6.834 million in the tails of federal child care development funds for the 75th percentile initiative. And this bill uses those funds the same way the governor does in his proposal. And Madam Chair, that's the change that is the summary of the changes in the human services side of the sheet.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. And we will turn to Ms. Beckel to walk through the remainder of the spreadsheet.
And I will.
Chair, allow me to share my screen. Okay. Again, as last time, I'm working off of the PDF instead of the Excel spreadsheet. So that's why it looks a little different. There are just a few items in the education area that changed with the A4 amendment. I've also updated the spreadsheet to show with an asterisk, for example, on line 66 and line 73, where an appropriation that was made in fiscal year 23, is available through fiscal year 2025. So that's those items there. And then I will move down. Lines 179, again, this appropriation is available until June 30th, 2025. And then there were two additional, two changes to the appropriation. So line 68, the Early Childhood Family Education Office at MDE, it was getting funding at $300,000 per year, and now that funding has been increased to $325,000 per year. Now moving down, line 81, as Ms. Mock mentioned, the workforce study on childcare is as an appropriation to deed, which is $255,000 in fiscal year 2023 only. And those are the only education changes made with the A4 amendment.
All right, thank you, Ms. Beckel. And at this point, members, we're gonna be taking a vote on the A4. And we have time for questions on the A4 amendment. And while you're thinking if you have a question or not, I do want to take this opportunity to thank our nonpartisan staff for the incredibly challenging work that they have done to produce the bill as you see it right now. And I know that I speak for everyone and that you'll hear these thoughts echoed again. So Ms. Bach, Mr. Berg, Ms. Beckel, thank you for the work that's reflected in what we're seeing this morning. And now, members, questions on the A4 amendment, knowing that we will be discussing the bill as a whole, have plenty of time to discuss the bill at the whole, but right now for the A4 amendment, any member questions? And I do see maybe Ms. Beckel, clarification on something we've already presented. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I neglected to mention one of the very important changes from the DE to the A4. The A4 also increases funding for early learning scholarships so that it is funded at $150 million in fiscal year 23 and then $45 million in each year of the TAILS. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier.
Well, we appreciate that you caught it now and a reminder for the committee too of how we've improved funding for that program. Thank you. All right, any other member questions at this point for the A4 amendment? I'm seeing none. All right, seeing none. Members, we will now vote to adopt the A4 amendment to the DE2 amendment. Please unmute yourselves for voice vote. All in favor of adopting the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment to the amendment is adopted. We will now move to the adoption of the DE amendment, simply to get the bill in its final shape before moving to further discussion and a roll call vote on the bill. So Chair Pinto renews the motion to adopt the DE2 amendment as amended. All those in favor of adopting the DE2 amendment as amended, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment as amended is adopted and staff is directed to make any technical corrections as needed. We will now open it up for questions and discussions on House File 4735 as amended by the DE2 amendment as amended. All right, we got through that. And the floor is open to member comments and questions at this point. And I do see Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Pinto, for bringing this bill forward. I am really proud of this bill. I'm really proud of the work that this committee has done over these two sessions and certainly over this last session in really difficult times. I believe this bill is going to make a real difference in the lives of thousands of Minnesotans across our state in a really important way. As we are nearing the end of our committee process, I have been sort of reflecting on my time as a first-term member in this committee. I just have been really grateful for my time on this committee and just everything that I've learned and the important work that we are doing. And as I reflected on this committee and all that I've learned and what we've heard, a couple of things just really struck me. Two themes sort of came across for me. One is the importance of this work and the importance of these early childhood years. We heard consistently from experts time after time about the brain development and how important these early years are for our littlest Minnesotans and how what happens in those early years sets kids on a path for the rest of their life and how important investments are in this period. That was made really clear to me time and time again. If we wanna make differences in closing opportunity gaps, if we wanna make difference in increasing graduation rates, differences in health disparities, investing in this early childhood space is where we do it and how we make those changes. And so that was made really clear to me through the testimony and presentations we have heard over the course of this committee. And the second sort of theme that came across to me was that this is a system in crisis. It's not working for so many folks. It's not working for families. You know, cost of care for our littles is so expensive, sometimes prohibitively so. At the same time, the really skilled expert folks who are caring for and teaching our little ones are not making a living wage often, and oftentimes not having benefits. And that the testimony that we heard throughout this committee, and some really great testimony even just yesterday, was really has stuck with me. And I will say, as I have conversations with people across my district, hardly a conversation goes by where this topic does not come up, because it impacts so many people. And so those are the conversations that stick with me, both the testimony that we have heard here and the really powerful stories of the needs that we have heard here, and those conversations I have with people across my district, people like a teacher that I have spoke with who, you know, has been doing this work for 15 years and loves it. And she does it because she cares about the littles that she takes care of, but she's not making a living wage and she is not making ends meet. So she doesn't know if she can continue. I think about a mom that I spoke with just a couple of weeks ago who shared that, you know, she knows that we are making decisions about billions of dollars. And her words to me were just, don't forget about us. She has two little ones in childcare and pays tens of thousands of dollars every year. She said, I don't know how much longer I can keep doing it. So please don't forget about us as you're making those decisions. And so those are the stories that stick with me. And those two themes, as I reflect on my time in this committee, really became very, very clear to me, both the importance of this work and the deep needs that are there. And so the good news is that we can do something about that, which is why I'm so happy about this bill and proud of this bill, because we do have resources as a state. We have, you know, over $9 billion. And how we choose to spend that money is a reflection of our values. And a budget is a moral document. And we have a responsibility to care for folks across our state, and especially in this space with so much need. And so all of those reasons, I am really, really excited and proud of this bill. I think it is a reflection of our values. And so there's lots of pieces in it that I'm really happy about. And I'll name just a couple for the sake of time. A few of those that I am most excited about are the raising of the CCAP rates to the 75th percentile, which is as we know, is the sort of the federal recommendation. And so that is going to increase access for many, many families and health providers as well. I'm excited about the changing of the definition of family to include foster parents and custodians and guardians, which again will also expand access for families. I'm excited about making the changes to the wait list for the basic sliding fee program permanent. That is also going to expand access to many, many families across the state and decrease those waiting lists. And lastly, I'm really excited to be able to continue those stabilization grants to be able to support the providers across the state. And so it's really been an honor to serve on this committee. I've learned so much. I believe it's critically important work. I know that families across the state are counting on us. And so I will be enthusiastically voting yes for this bill. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Bolden. Next, I will turn to Representative Juergens.
Thank you. See if I hit my mute. I wasn't expecting to go next.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to comment briefly. First of all, thank you, Chair Pinto. I appreciate the way that you run your meetings. I've heard from other members and other committees issues with the minority getting called on and getting a chance to talk, and that's never an issue in your committee. So I want to thank you for that. I just want to comment a little bit on the declared emergency staffing and group size. You know, this was in effect during the emergency, and to my knowledge, there weren't any issues or problems with it. So I would like to see this, you know, potentially looked at as a permanent change, not only during emergencies. You know, if there were problems, then I don't think that it would, if there were problems with the staffing levels during the emergency, I don't think we'd be including in the bill at all. So the fact that there weren't any, I think that that's something that we should consider just going forward, to have more flexibility for the staffing sizes. And really that's my only comment. I know other people have other issues that they want to talk about with this bill. But again, Chair Pinto, thanks for the way that you are have run this committee. It's been an honor to be on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. Next, we'll turn to Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to add my voice of thanks to Mr. Chair, to the members of this committee, and to the many advocates for early childhood care and learning, and to the testifiers we've heard over the course of this session. The testifiers yesterday were particularly compelling and, of course, are fresh in our minds. They were quite inspirational. I loved the directness and the fire that my pediatrician colleagues brought to their testimony. They see firsthand how these issues impact infants and young children and their families, and they are demanding action to invest in them. We've known for a long time about the importance of early learning, of the first 1,000 days, of the first 3 years. The science and the data and the experience has been there to guide us. But our youngest Minnesotans can't vote, and many of the benefits of investing in them don't show up until years later. So we've lumbered along and have not acted as a society to invest in them and their families adequately. The crisis that in cost and availability of childcare had been growing precipitously prior to the pandemic, but the pandemic shined a bright light on the unsustainability of our approach. Our economy, our collective future prosperity, and many individual lives depend on our changing course. This budget responds to those needs and to the reality, the necessity of investing in our youngest Minnesotans and in the people who care for them and teach them. I'm proud of many parts of this bill, including investing in CCAP, early learning scholarships, and childcare stabilization grants, and mental health supports for young children. And I'm thrilled my provision to invest in prenatal and early postpartum universal voluntary home visiting, which started in our early childhood committee, is included in the HHS omnibus, recognizing its importance in helping our youngest Minnesotans and their families get off to the best possible start. I'm grateful for all the work of the partisan and nonpartisan staff on this committee, with a special shout out to Hans Dosland, who's our committee CLA and also works as chair Pinto and my legislative assistant, and performs all those roles with grace and excellence. And finally, a special word of gratitude to Chair Pinto. He has been a relentless advocate and leader in calling for making early childhood care and learning a state priority. He's the rare blend of an activist advocate who is also an effective legislator, respected and liked on both sides of the aisle. All Minnesotans are lucky to have him in this role, and it has been my honor to serve on his committee for the past 4 years. Thank you, Chair Pinto, and everyone else. Let's vote yes on this.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. And just by the way, we're going to be, we will call on all members, but as we work our way through, I'm going to call on Representative Wolgamott next.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and all the members of this committee. It has been such an honor to serve with each and every one of you, as we want to make sure that all of the children in Minnesota have the high quality care and resources that they need to succeed. And I was thinking about reflecting on the work of our committee, and I know that sometimes this committee is affectionately referred to as the kiddie table. And while I like that and take pride in that, because that is who we're fighting for, at the same time, I'm proud of this committee because the work that we do sets the table for the success of all of our students. We know how crucial those early years are in development. In fact, that's why I wanted to be on this committee. Right now, my daughter Polly is a kindergartner, but a couple of years ago when I was pouring through, you know, which committees I wanted to be on this biennium, my daughter Polly was right in the middle of preschool. And the growth that I saw as a parent, in the both with relationships and academics and everything, just really blew my mind. And it's so special what can be accomplished in those early years. So again, I'm proud of this bill. I'm proud of all the conversations that we've had. One thing I really want to highlight is our proposal that establishes a statewide voluntary pre-kindergarten program for children who are least likely to have access to early learning. This will deliver educational opportunities to thousands of children and give them the tools that they need to succeed when they come into kindergarten. But we know that it will pay dividends all throughout their lives. So again, members, very proud of the work that we've done in this committee. I want to thank Minority Lead Franzen for her leadership. I know that even when we have our disagreements, I'm really proud that in this subcommittee, we've handled them in a classy and respectful way. And I think the rest of the committee should look at how we've handled this. So thank you for that, Lead Franzen. And I wanted to thank you, Chair Pinto, as Representative Morrison so perfectly put, your leadership, the approach you take to this committee, the approach that you take to handling the disagreements that we've had with minority members, your passion, your dedication to these little kiddos, right? That's what this committee is all about. And our bill reflects the best of that. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lead Franzen. Thank you to every member of this committee. I'm excited to vote yes for this bill and for what this is going to mean for Minnesota's children going forward. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Next, I'll turn to Representative Carly Katiza-Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, staff. It's been an absolute honor to serve our littlest Minnesotans with you this biennium. I'm particularly pleased about this supplemental budget bill and the focus on overcoming and/or reversing the impact of early childhood trauma. We have heard from experts on brain science and early care and learning again and again about the importance of the first few years of a child's life. The impact of trauma can begin in utero, and the work that our colleagues are doing in other committees, the Housing, Workforce, and Public Safety Committees, just to name a few that we've done these combination hearings with this year, will help ensure that parents-to-be are supported during their pregnancy and beyond. Providing additional funding for early learning scholarships and childcare assistance will provide more affordable childcare for these families once the baby is born. Investing in family, friend, and neighbor caregivers, an ombudsperson for family childcare providers, and early childhood social workers that focus on our kids' mental health will contribute to improved quality of care and business success for our providers. I appreciate the inclusion of my proposals for allocations to early Head Start, executive functioning grants to the Family Partnership, Reach Out and Read Minnesota, and the Early Childhood Workforce Study that's in partnership with DEED. Coincidentally, members, most of you are well aware that my time on this committee over the last two bienniums has overlapped almost perfectly with my journey into parenthood. I know the presentations that we've seen that Chair Pinto has brought forward have made me a better mom. And I know the policies that we are putting into place will help all of our littlest Minnesotans get off to a great start. The state as a whole benefits from these investments when they happen, and the future of Minnesota is bright. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for everything that you've done, and to the staff and colleagues. It's been a wonderful journey this biennium.
Thank you, Representative Katiza-Watun. Next, I'll turn to Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A lot of what I'll probably say, and I'll probably be shorter because my colleagues have said a lot of the things I was gonna say, but I just wanna reiterate the importance of investments in our youngest Minnesotans. We've seen with pretty much every single presentation we've had in this committee since a lot of us started here in 2019, the science that shows us that investments in our youngest learners are so important for a variety of reasons. We had a presentation in the public safety with the public safety committee that talked about how important those investments are and important investments in kids and families can be in terms of outcomes of public safety. But we also know that, as my colleague Representative Kelly Morrison said, the outcomes for health and education and workforce, all of the outcomes, we know that these investments are really important and can be really impactful in the lives of not only our youngest Minnesotans, but the lives of all Minnesotans who benefit from these investments. I just wanna say, I feel like this bill is, it's such a comprehensive bill. So it does so much to address so many needs that we know exist in the state, increasing access and affordability to childcare for families so that they can go back in the workforce. I believe I read something recently that said that lack of care situations are sort of the number two reason why people aren't going back to the workforce. And that care includes childcare. And so this is an important piece that we can get more folks access to childcare so they're able to go back to work and be able to continue that to be able to support their families. I'm also really excited to see mental health supports in this bill. I think it's a really important piece that, you know, we've we've talked about mental health and a lot in various ways in different committees. And I think it's really important that we had a mental health crisis before the pandemic. It's only gotten worse during the pandemic. And I think it's really important that we do anything that we can, especially on the early end, to prevent mental health conditions from getting worse in our littlest ones, and to be able to help them provide the services to help them and their families, you know, deal with the mental health issues that are coming up and hopefully address those before they become too serious. We're also doing a lot to support providers and to address the workforce shortage. So I'm particularly excited about some of the Family Child Care Task Force recommendations that we made in the task force several years ago that are continuing to get funding. The One-Step Regional Assistance Network and the Shared Services Grants continuing to get funding. The modernization pilot project, so that all of the work that's being done in the regulation modernization piece will be able to have some pilot projects and be able to refine some of the recommendations as we move forward and make sure that they really fit with what folks see as being the good sort of good ideas for how to move forward on that interstate. I also just want to recognize the two pieces, the Grow Your Own Early Childhood piece and the Workforce Development Study. I think that will help us really one, get an understanding of what our workforce is facing with the study, but also to understand to be able to promote folks going into the field. So we wanting to let the organizations and the schools and all those folks who will be able to sort of grow their own early childhood educators and care providers. I think that's a really important piece. Anything that we can do to address the serious workforce shortage issue in this area will be helpful. Finally, I just want to recognize the early learning scholarships increase in this legislation, and also knowing the importance of our youngest learners, the birth to three, expanding that so that those youngest Minnesotans can get access to the scholarships. And then the Brain Builders Bonus Program, so that we're providing these bonuses to providers who provide support, provide care for infants who really those key years of brain development. And it's really important to have sort of a stable adult in their lives to help provide that care and provide that continuation of care. So just, I think this is a great bill. I'm really excited to support it today. I think it really does take a comprehensive look at the issues that we're facing in our state in regards to early learning and care. And I am grateful to the work of Chair Pinto and the members of the committee and the staff to put together this great bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wasilek. Next, I'll turn to Representative Damon.
Thank you, Vice Chair Pryor. And Mr. Chair, Bill Author, thank you for your leadership with this committee. I have enjoyed serving on the committee. Once again, we've learned much together. We may see things differently, but I think all purposes and intents is that we want to do what is best for Minnesota kids, starting from very early. I would like to make a couple of comments on the bill with the early learning scholarships. While that age range is technically expanded to cover from birth to age four, the change in age prioritization will actually shift the scholarship funding to our infants and toddlers, and that could pave the way for school-based pre-kindergarten to actually scoop up our four-year-old children. Additionally, while the financial commitment in this bill looks appealing, the fine print in the education omnibus bill is clear that the Commissioner of Education could repurpose these funds to fuel the pre-kindergarten expansion even this coming school year. I do appreciate and support increasing the income eligibility to serve households up to the 200% of the federal poverty level, which I actually proposed in my HF 3806 that I introduced back in February. However, I regret that reforms in the quality rating system and linking scholarships to the general education revenue were absent. This bill is a missed opportunity to put forward not only a real commitment to the proven evidence-based early learning scholarship model, rather than layering on more rules and bureaucracies on our providers. I also feel that it's a missed opportunity for reforms that empower parents to choose their provider of choice and expand opportunities for more providers, especially our family child care providers, to be that provider of choice. I will be a no on the bill today. But again, I thank you for the work that's gone forward, and I hope that we can come to a compromise and do what's best for our littlest Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. Next, I'll turn to Representative and Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Pinto. Your leadership in the early childhood area, your grasp of this complex area that spans committees and agencies and geographies, and your knowledge base and commitment is really a model for how a legislator can come into this body and lead and really change the arc of state policy and impact families' lives here. So thank you for that. You know, members, many previous speakers have reviewed the many important elements of the bill. And while speaking briefly is not usually my strong suit, I'm gonna try, mostly by limiting my comments and trying to avoid much of what's already been said. I'm pleased to carry in the education finance bill the expansion of the voluntary pre-kindergarten program opportunities for 2,200 more four-year-olds in a mixed delivery system that started here in this committee with Chair Pinto's bill. It's so important for assuring that Minnesota children get a strong start in pre-kindergarten. What I value about this bill is it starts even earlier with investments in things like the Brain Builders grants, the critical increase in CCAP rates, the expansion of the family partnerships, two-generation approach around executive functioning to sites in urban, suburban, and greater Minnesota. The support for the Children's Museum, that informal opportunity for children to learn and play in a structured setting. And then, of course, Reach Out and Read books in the pediatrician's office. That was an important part of my children's growing up, getting those first books at those first well child visits after birth, and seeing that program expand and provide it to more families is great. But what I really want to have the committee consider is the critical need for this bill at this time. We're in a workforce crisis in Minnesota, across industries and geographies. Our unemployment rate is at record lows. When I took Economics 101, we were told we could never have unemployment rates that were this low. And yet we do, and there's help wanted signs up in stores and factories and offices across Minnesota. An important part of the demand for more workers is the lack of accessible, affordable childcare. Folks can't go back to work. Our economy is limited in its ability to build out of these past several years of a global pandemic, in part because childcare is not accessible and not affordable to too many Minnesota families. This bill helps with that. This bill is an investment in Minnesota's economy, in Minnesota's businesses, and in Minnesota's workers. And when I say workers, it's everyone, but it's importantly, investing in our childcare workforce. The study to look at that workforce so we can better understand it, its challenges, the opportunities, and what the state could do is so important that we as policymakers get the information that we need to move from anecdote to data and deliberative policymaking. And then the support we provide childcare workers in honing their skills and building their skills in being more effective and hopefully leading to better paid, better benefits for them, because that childcare workforce, as folks said yesterday, is the workforce behind the workforce, and the contributions that they make to Minnesota's workforce through their care of small children is critical and should be rewarded in a way that values the contributions they make. This is the right bill at the right time. Chair Pinto, thank you. I look forward to supporting it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I'm gonna take this moment just to make a few comments too, as we go through this process before we head into our closing remarks between Representative Franson, Lead Franson, and the bill author, Chair Pinto. I want to maybe echo some of the things that we've already heard, how important the process has been to this committee. And this has been a comprehensive process. It's been a data-driven process. We've heard from experts. Even yesterday, we heard from a neonatologist, Dr. Sheldon, Roger Sheldon, talking about the importance of these first years. We've heard from child care providers, not just child care providers in the metro area that could actually show up at a hearing, but because of this virtual world, we were able to hear from child care providers from all over the state. We heard from parents seeking child care. We heard from mothers at some point that talked about the experience of their home visiting experiences. All of these people have been coming forward with their perspective on early childhood and informing our work. And we've done that work. This is a comprehensive bill that addresses the broken system that's early childhood right now. It addresses it through the increases in child care assistant rates and also changing the waiting list, making that permanent, those changes. We're also addressing it through our early learning scholarships. We're also trying to build on what we're doing now so that we go forward in a more thoughtful and more comprehensive way with work such as the Workforce Task Force, understanding who are the workers doing childcare right now and who we need to recruit to that field. The technology grant to improve how our system works for families by improving the infrastructure of it, the technological infrastructure for it, and also the true cost of care study. So these are initiatives that can give us a better system in the future, because we know right now our system is failing. There's one more stakeholder group that we actually could not bring into the committee. We've seen pictures. And a couple times, Representative Carly Katizumatoon has brought forward one of the actual people. But in our minds, we need to keep going back to the voiceless ones that we're really working for right now and are at the center of this bill. So these are children that right now are being conceived in Minnesota, going through that prenatal development, that will be born as these changes and this funding goes into effect, and that will be growing up, going through their early childhood years and entering our K-12 system. And what we do today in voting for this bill has an impact on all of those. And as we heard yesterday from Ms. Jost in her testimony, we need to think about those babies. And it's easy for me because I just, this weekend I'm going to be holding a newborn. He's a week old. And it's one of the biggest thrills anybody can have. And it's through looking at his face that I'm holding in front of me when I vote yes to this bill. And I know that we appreciate the work of everybody, whether you're voting yes or no, because we know that that's what you're also thinking about too. And we appreciate how you make this bill better and how you have made this bill better. But we know that we have to take that step and we have to move forward. And this is what's right for today. So appreciate those comments. And again, I have to say, I appreciate our chair too. And I have to throw that in too at the end, but he will get the last word. But right now I'd like to turn to our lead Franson, who shows up every morning at 8:30. And we could not do this without you, Lead Branson. Your comments, please.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. And it definitely has been a joy to be on this committee. I think I'll echo what Representative Wolgamont had said. We may not always agree. Most of the time we don't agree, but we do it in a respectful manner. And I think that's probably why I enjoy this committee so much, is because we all get along very well and we all have the same interests, and it's our children that we are discussing. So your words are very kind to Representative Pryor. So I really hope that you have a fantastic time holding that little newborn baby. And that is always such a joy. So to the bill at hand, while we disagree on the bill, my comments are just meant as an opportunity for the majority to fix this bill going forward in ways and means. Okay, I see Chair Pinto kind of grinning there, but that's what the minority is giving the majority, the opportunity to fix the bill. So with my comments, take these very seriously, take them into ways and means and give us a bill that the majority can vote for. As far as the child care assistance program rate increases, the bill doubles down on the CCAP program with the assumption that fraud and corruption issues that rocked this program before the pandemic are either long gone or at least forgotten. The pandemic has been a goldmine for fraud, as we have seen in the federal nutrition reimbursement program. That would be the Feeding Our Fraud, or really it's Feed Our Future, but I call it Feed Our Fraud because that is an astronomical amount of money that was taken from a worthy program, the Child Care Nutrition Assistance Program, and funneled into the hands of uncouth characters who use that money for other reasons than making sure our children in the state of Minnesota were taken care of. And now we see in St. Cloud that there was an uncouth character that fraudulently was in a scheme to, you know, fraud the SNAP program. Actually, three of our MFIA members, the Mafia members, Minnesota Fraud Investigators Association, three of our very own was involved in that investigation and helping put a little sunshine into that. So we do have fraud. And so I don't want us to think that it's all taken care of, since that particular CCAP hasn't been in the news lately. But with the federal programs, we do know that these uncouth characters are coming up with new ways to fraud such very important programs in our state. And so this massive general fund commitment is a leap of faith that integrity will now flow from the money in it. So I just disagree with that portion of the bill. And then with the child care stabilization grants, the stabilization grants were started with one-time federal emergency funding to provide a stopgap for providers hit hard by the governor's orders to shut down the economy. This bill proposes making a temporary emergency program a long-term funding commitment under the full control of the Commissioner of Human Services with no statutory guardrails. I was very concerned about this situation last year. I'm even more concerned about it now that we really are truly moving this into a permanent program, something I warned about last year. You have surrendered our legislative and fiscal authority to the executive branch, which they will use to pick and choose the childcare providers they want to help. This, at the same time, you are about to empower the Department of Education to pick and choose which providers will share in the funding for pre-kindergarten. Listen, government does not want the private sector to flourish. Government wants all of the kids under their own control. So we need to really look at that program and fix it, that proposal, and fix it by the time it reaches Ways and Means in the House floor. Mr. Chair, as always, it has been a pleasure to work with you and your colleagues across the aisle. And I think, as I've stated before, that you have run this committee with fairness and respect for the views of the minority. I've appreciated our one-on-one chats that we've had on Monday, and we've always had a wonderful, cordial conversations during that time, and sometimes with a lot of laughter during these long weeks. So I've really appreciated that, and I consider you a friend. Our differences, while passionate, should never be poisonous. We simply disagree on how to serve our families in need while making the fair field feel fair for all of our providers. And I know that each and every one of us on our committee believe that. And I just really enjoy Representative Wolgamont's enthusiasm when he speaks about an issue too. He brings a lot of joy to this committee. And Representative Pryor, you are so very committed. I love when you get excited about bills. It shows on your face. And you know, while we're not in person, it has, you know, that joy does transfer through the computer screen. And One size fits all system of childcare cannot be the solution. As I said, I do not want government being the only provider for childcare here in the state of Minnesota. A system of childcare bureaucrats rather than parents are the decision makers. A system of childcare where bureaucrats rather than parents are the decision makers cannot be the solution. So we always have to remember that parents need to be in control of where their children should go, whether they want them in a public school setting or if they want them in a private sector setting, but let parents decide that, not have government force parents into that one size fits all government model. And then a system of childcare that continues to wipe out our family childcare providers cannot be the solution. This bill is chock full of spending and not a large commitment of state general funds. It is easy for the advocates to be seduced by these big numbers, but members, the devil is always in the details. Our providers cannot afford buyer's remorse when they realize the system being sold did not include them. I do not want to continue hearing from members of the community and around the state, what are you doing for childcare, which is what they are saying now. And I feel that this bill, as proposed, will only aggravate the situation. So members, I am going to be voting no today. I encourage a no vote. But Mr. Chair, thank you very much for your hard work on this topic. Thanks.
Thank you, Lee Franson. And now we will turn to closing remarks from Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, so much for this discussion. I guess a little heads up to members of the public and members that I may take a little bit longer than I sometimes do, but I'll try to keep things focused. One of the reasons that I'll note that this may feel to those watching we're having every single person speak, et cetera, is that the nature of this committee that I had proposed to the speaker several years ago is that our jurisdiction is split in multiple areas and that we actually don't get the opportunity as our bills move along to have the chance to really focus in the way that in some other committees, some other areas they do when the bills come up on the House floor. Once we move out today, the bill will move in different directions, in education and then health and human services. And we really end up being chopped up. It has been such an honor to work with the folks who are on this Zoom, members of the public are watching for the past 2 years and 4 years in many cases. I am so grateful, as others have noted, to our incredible staff, to Ms. Mock and to Mr. Berg and Ms. Beckel for their work, and then to our partisan staff, to the committee administrator, Sydney Spreck, and Hans Dosland, our committee legislative assistant, and Maris Beltrandi-Rudquist and Jody Withers, the researchers with each of our caucuses. These are just incredible people who are working enormously hard for us. And I am grateful to every single member of this committee for the time that you've put in, the attention that you have put in. This is, again, a really challenging area, and a number of us noted that. We're not built to, unfortunately, state government is not built to be addressing these issues in a comprehensive, multifaceted way. And we've really tried to do that together over the past few years. I'm really proud that the work that we've done has been part of a broader set of efforts relating to get young kids off to a great start. Representative Morrison referenced the proposal for family home visiting, maternal and child health proposals, paid family leave, I want to emphasize. You see some of those pieces in our bill because they happen to be in our jurisdiction regarding the Children's Museum, regarding Reach Out and Read and other programs. But a key focus of our work has been in early care and learning. And that is the bulk of what we have jurisdictional control over. And so if members of the public are watching and kind of wanting us to take a broader perspective, it's true. But early care and learning is what we have the most control over, what we can try to focus on. And that is a huge piece of this bill. Members, we've heard over the past number of years in this committee about how this sector was in deep crisis even before the pandemic. We know that parents are paying a huge amount of money, huge proportion of their income for this critical service for which the people who are doing it receive poverty wages. I think 40 some percent on public assistance, a third experience food insecurity. These are the teachers of our children. And the opportunity gaps that we see in school and in our society as a whole, they all start in these earliest weeks and months and years. We've heard this many, many times in our committee, but I think before we vote on this bill, it's important that we just pause and remember these facts, remember the squeeze in this area. Nobody doubts that there should be public support of some kind for the education and development of children between the ages of 5 and 18. And to my mind, no one should doubt that there needs to be support. Of course, we can discuss the format, but there needs to be public support for a public need in the earliest critical weeks and months and years as well. Members, this bill reflects those realities that we've identified in the course of the past few years. This bill gets young children who are vulnerable off to the great start that they deserve. I want to highlight the $240 million going into the early learning scholarships for vulnerable and low-income infants and toddlers. I have heard members of this committee say we need Pathway One scholarships. This is what we need. This is $240 million going into that. And the argument to oppose that is because if we have money that we spend on infants and toddlers, that might do something for preschool. I don't think that most Minnesotans are going to go much with that argument. I think most Minnesotans are going to say, if we have a young child, an infant or toddler who is in deep poverty, whose parent is incarcerated, experiencing homeless or highly mobile, we need to make sure that children gets off to a great start. And we have these Pathway 1 scholarships that we've heard a lot about that we invest in. We then have the CCAP program, recognizing that families need assistance to pay for early care and learning. And all we're doing in this bill is getting the rates that are paid in that program back up to the level that they used to be in our state and the level that the federal government says will allow families to be able to afford their care. If you do the calculations, we want to make sure that families are not having to shell out 30 or 40% of their income so that their child can receive a high quality experience when they're young. And so the parent can then work and have our society go along and be supported. So we put funding into that, and we make sure that we have a greater variety of families to be able to be supported, those foster care guardians, and that we have ongoing funding to make sure that we don't have children sitting on the waiting list as much as they have been and waiting for care and their parents waiting for care as well. So we're addressing in that the area of low-income kids. In other parts of the budget, we're addressing the need of middle-income families to be able to afford early care and learning and have other pieces relating to that. And then what we do is we direct a lot to make sure that this sector has the stability that it needs. It is true that we continue the monthly payments that have been going out to providers and then going in turn to workers. And we do continue that in the future, recognizing that, again, this is a public need and it needs public support. Members, if your reason to vote against this is because it's missing something relating to regulations, it's missing something relating to how quality is featured or whatever else, this is, of course, an opportunity to bring an amendment relating to that. We have had none. If your argument against the bill is because you have concerns with a voluntary pre-K program that is mixed delivery, that has a number of different options for families, but if you disagree with that, that's fine, that's your business. That is not in this bill. We voted that out last week. What this bill is focused on is making sure that we support early care and learning providers, we support infants and toddlers, we support those who are going into this critical sector so that teachers and caregivers and others can get the support that they need so that they can give our young kids the support that they need. If we get the question, members, what are you doing about childcare? The answer is, we are going at it hard. We are absolutely providing support for this most critical sector in our society, the people who lay the foundation for everything that follows. Members, I urge you to support this bill. We will continue to have discussions in Ways and Means and on the floor and beyond, but this is your opportunity to say that you support each of these pieces and can respond to that question, what are we doing about childcare, to say we are doing a lot and we are very proud of it. So members, I would urge your support. It has been such an honor to work with every one of you in these past years, and I know these conversations will continue. I'm grateful to your commitment and to your work. I've been grateful to the partnership with Lee Franson, and I know that will continue as well. Thank you so much, members, and I urge your support for the bill.
All right, thank you, members. Thank you, Chair Pinto. Chair Pinto renews the motion to refer House File 4735 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Pinto.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pryor.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
No.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Daphne.
Daphne, aye.
Representative Damath.
Damath is no.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, no.
Representative Cotiza-Watoon.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasluwick.
Wasluwick, aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes aye.
The vote results in 8 ayes, 2 noes, and 2 excused.
With a vote of 8 ayes, 2
nays. 3 noes, excuse me.
Oops, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Dolesman. With a vote of 8 ayes, 3 noes, and 2 excused, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Chair Pinto will now resume the gavel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, very much. And I really do urge all of us to continue the conversations. I know that we will. And I'm grateful to every single one of you for our work over these past 2 years. It has been a roller coaster. Let's continue to work together to figure out ways to get young kids off to a great start and to support their families and in turn support our communities. Any future meetings of our committee are going to be scheduled to call the chair. I suspect that there will be some. I might come up with another joint hearing or two just to warn you all, because I really do enjoy those. I think you all found them beneficial as well. But in the meantime, again, I'm really grateful for our work. I would urge members of the public who may be watching this to share your thoughts with us and with our colleagues, because of course we now release the bill out to the rest of the House, and to say what you think about the pieces, what you've heard today, and what you think of the bill, and to get involved and to share your thoughts. As Representative Pryor said, the people of the most stake in this, the youngest Minnesotans, will be here after we're all gone. They can't necessarily speak up. And so I really want to urge you to share your thoughts from whatever perspective. And again, we all care about this. You share your thoughts with our fellow legislators and policymakers as we move things forward. So I'm just looking to see in case there's anything else anybody has. I'm not seeing any hands. Thank you so much, members, for your work and for your words, and let's continue to work together. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.